Hello, everybody, and welcome to the 417th episode of MTG Fast Finance, the podcast run by two serialized bobbleheads that love to hear themselves talk. MTG Fast Finance is your weekly podcast covering the world of Magic the Gathering finance, collection management, and speculation. I am your host, James Chilcott, a.k.a. at MTG Critic on Twitter. My co-host is Cliff Daigle, a.k.a. at Word of Commander on Twitter, and we're here to help you folks make and save money playing our favorite game, Magic the Gathering.
Hello, everybody. As always, I'm looking forward to diving into all the developments of the week. But before we do, I want to remind all of our listeners that this show is produced by MTGPrice.com, the leading MTG finance community. Please sign up today at MTGPrice.com to plan your specs, chat on a great Discord, and read articles by some of the best financial minds in the hobby.
MTG Fast Finance is proudly sponsored by Cool Stuff, Inc., where you can find all sorts of cool, nerdy stuff in stock, including all the best in Magic the Gathering singles, sealed product, and a plethora of other collectibles. Use the promo code FINANCE5, that's the number 5, during checkout at CoolStuffInc.com. Save 5% off your order and support this podcast. Cliff, what is on the agenda this week?
We're going to lead off with the Metagame Week in Review. We've got a couple fun modern challenges to talk about and cool things that people are doing online. Segment 2 is our top movers of the week, followed by our top movers online. Then we've got cards to watch. You and I have picks for great things that should creep up in value. And then we need to talk about Fallout. It's coming out this coming Friday, the 8th, and there's some data out there that indicates this set might be a real goldmine for folks who are able to get in it the right way.
All right, let's kick things off here with the Metagame Week in Review. We'll take a look at a pair of modern challenges, had a bunch of big paper tournaments in the last couple weeks, but we're back to some Magic online viewing. Modern Challenge had about 100 people on Friday. This was taken down by Red White Burn, Green Black Yawgmoth in second, Living End in fifth, Blue Black Mill in sixth, Leyline of the Guild Pack Rhinos was in seventh with 4 Leyline, 4 Scion, and 4 Subtlety. And then the two most interesting decks of the week outside of that Leyline build that's been ascendant is Blue Tron, finishing in third with 4 times Tashana's Tidebinder, 3 The One Ring, and 4 copies of Subtlety. There's also an Esper's Goryeo's Vengeance deck making the rounds, which finished in both 4th and 8th, with 4 Atraxa, Grand Unifier, 4 Solitude, 4 Vengeance, and I think at least one of the versions had 4 copies of Grief as well.
This is a hilarious Blue Tron deck. First of all, 2 Chalice main deck and no one drops, which is glorious in Modern, so you're going to take care of a lot of problems that way. The only one drop they
have is... Expedition map.
They are running the map. So I guess you got one thing that it turns off. But then this isn't really any... They've only got 1 Ugin, 1 Emrakul, the Promised End, and 1 Ulamog, the Ceaseless Hunger, as the like big Tron payoffs. Otherwise, this is a Karn deck with all kinds of goodies to go. You got a Funzy Cyclonic Rift. You can go Karn for basically everything in the sideboard, including a One Ring, the Walking Ballista for the win. I love this. I bet this was a blast to play. Repeal and Remand. Tidebinder is just all over the place because there's so many good things to do with it, right? You just counter what they're doing, and whatever they were doing can't do anything else. So you just play that and...
Specifically, it turns off Endurance, Solitude, and Grief in response, right?
Right, and also, you know, those things lose their abilities as long as the Tidebinder stays in play. So not only do you counter the ability, you just, you know, make them lame creatures.
Does it stop them from dying from Evoke?
That is a very good question. I think
that doesn't seem like something you want to do.
Right. I don't think so. Actually, I don't know. I got to check. Yeah, counter is a trigger. But that permanent loses its abilities. I'm not judge enough to know the answer to that.
Yeah, I'd have to double check on it as well. But I would imagine it's also pretty good against the Esper Goryeo's Vengeance decks when Atraxa comes into play and looks to grab a whole pile of cards into the hand.
I mean, I do love a good reanimator list, and this is a good reanimator list.
Can Tidebinder steal abilities from non-creature permanents? One artifact counter enters the battlefield, counter up to one target activated or triggered ability. Yeah, so when they One Ring, you can do this as well.
Planeswalkers as well.
They think that they're going to be shields up, but they're not. So yeah, there's lots of stuff for this to mess with in the format, hence why you're seeing the adoption outside of Merfolk. Over in the Modern Challenge on the Saturday, about the same amount of people, just about 100. Green-Black Yawgmoth took this one down. Blue-Black Mill showing up in both of these top eights, this time in second. Mono-Green-Tron instead of Blue-Tron in third. Living End in fourth. Blue-White Control in fifth. Green-Black Yawgmoth again in sixth. Black-White Scam. You know, usually had gotten used to seeing Black-Red Scam way more often, but this is back to the 4-Grief, 4-Solitude, alongside two copies of Boromir and two copies of Sheoldred, the Apocalypse. So that's a pretty spicy black-white mid-range deck. And then four-color Omnath was in eighth with three the One Ring, four Omnath, and four three Cast and Cost Teferi.
I still can't believe they've never reprinted Archive Trap. It's gotten one list copy, and that was it. Like, just for such a fun card that you can't help but want to play, and then, you know, you just... They're $15 cards, man. They're hard to get a hold of.
We'll have to see if Wizards tries to reinforce Mill at all in MH3.
It doesn't really
seem like they need it. They seem well positioned. I would imagine they'll focus more on things like elves, goblins. But, you know, time will tell. On over to Top Paper Movers. Pretty neat trim little list this week. Lots of action, but this is the stuff that stood out to me. Mesmeric Orb Schematics out of Brothers War, $6 to $8, 33% gains. That's probably related to the wise Mothman commander that cares about rad counters and milling. The Wandering Emperor Borderless, of course, that's been a big deal in Standard for pretty much the entire time since it was printed, and still has several months left, going 16 to 24. Also sees some Pioneer play, some EDH play. We've got Breena the Demagogue Extended Art out of C21, going 18 to 30. This has caught no reprints and has gotten up to 27,000 decks reported on EDH Rec, so pretty solid numbers there. We've also got the Savage Event Maw out of Adventures in the Forgotten Realms Commander decks. That was the reprint. 4 to 650, probably on the back of being an Ur-Dragon staple, I'd imagine.
Yeah, it's pretty good in there. Savage Event Maw and Klaus the something ancient, I don't remember his full name. Both of those are capable of some truly ridiculous turns, which, you know, every Dragon player wants to do.
I mean, looking at the top five commanders of the week, we're still dealing with Voja, Pantlaza, the Ur-Dragon, Atraxa, Praetor's Voice, and Judith, Carnage Connoisseur. So that explains the Ur-Dragon action. Been more or less consistently in the top 10, I think, pretty much since...
Since the reprint.
Printing... Yeah, since the reprint, but it also got some action from both AFR and CLB because they printed relevant dragons that reinvigorated the archetype and gave it some more tools. We've also got Battlefield Forge at a Brothers War, 2 to 350. That's on standard red-white decks needing it. Cemetery Prowler Extended Art at a Vow, $5 to $9 on the back of standard play. Defense of the Heart Confetti Foils. I've seen lots of discussion in the Discord lately from pro traders targeting Confetti Foils after we've talked about them a couple times on cast, and people have brought up favorites of their own here and there. The Defense of the Heart ones went 40 to 80. You know, this whole class of cards is drying up. And we're seeing this pattern repeat throughout premium sets and standard sets. The rarest stuff that they kick out doesn't take that long to ascend. You don't need to wait 6 months to a low to get in. A lot of the time you can find that low a couple months out, and then it starts to build up within 6 months. So, I mean, that's a pattern to keep your eye on for sure. Vorinclex, Voice of Hunger, foil etched, likewise. This is the Mom Universe Legends cards, foil etched, 7 to 16. It's in 43,000 decks on EDH Rec. We've got Arwen, Weaver of Hope. That's a Lord of the Rings commander card going $3 to $8 in non-foil, 167% gains as people start to realize that, you know, there hasn't been any news about additional Lord of the Rings products. And so it looks like what we got might just be what there is. People are taking a look at the cards that are most popular and, you know, biting off what they need for their decks and also trying to corner the market on what they can. Finally, at the top of this list, we've got Path of Peril, Extended Art Foils at a Vow. Seeing plenty of play in standard as a sweeper of choice in a couple of different shells. $4 to $20 on these. If you opened Vow CBs, get those Path of Perils out, because even the regular copies and regular foils are going to be things you're going to want to be selling while you can.
I mean, it's good early, it's good late if you can cast both sides, so it seems pretty awesome to do. This is also, we've seen Temporary Lockdown, that's the white enchantment that does something similar, only it's all non-land permanents, right? Yeah, Temporary Lockdown.
Temporary Lockdown exiles permanents two and under.
Right, but you can bring it back if you destroy the lockdown. This just destroys all the creatures, which is mostly what they care about, but having the flexibility to have this take out the cheap things early and take out everything late, that's pretty great. That's what control decks really want to lean on.
I wonder if the red-white Convoke decks in Pioneer are facing off against this card as well, since they have a fairly similar play pattern with the Knight Errant of Eos.
Yeah, Knight Errant is probably tokens. The only thing that doesn't cost two in those decks. The Heroic deck is had against it too, not just the Convoke decks.
Over on Magic Online, we've got Caves of Chaos Adventurer out of CLB going 6.71 ticks to 9.44. That's the Legacy 4th Aerolingus dungeon deck that you see here and there, where they can lean on the two mana lands like City of Traitors and Ancient Tomb to get the stuff out early and often. Undercity Sewers out of MKM, one of the Surveil lands, going 3.49 ticks to 5.18, 48% gains on broad adoption. And I would imagine, taking a look at whatever the local lows are on those on Magic Online, filling up several carts worth of the Surveil lands and waiting 6 months to a year seems very wise indeed.
At rotation, these should jump. These should jump at rotation, but they should grow for the whole time. Like, these are great lands. We see them in splashes in Modern. You know, people want to have a little Surveil, not just a little Triome action. And, like, especially once rotation happens and we lose the most popular cycles that we're currently playing, these should become some real default settings for the on the Surveil lands.
I've been putting them in a lot of EDH decks. I put the blue-black one in my Ninjas deck so that I can try to drop an Archon or something else into the yard and bring it back. I've put them into Muldrotha, so because it's a graveyard-focused deck to begin with.
Perfect in Muldrotha, yeah.
Yeah.
No downside.
All three of the relevant versions. And it's just, you know, if you're getting a Triome or you're getting a, you know, you have a classic revised duel, that's one thing. But if you... You know, I have duels in some of my decks, original duels, but I don't have them in all 25 of my decks. So,
you're up to 25 decks?
Yeah.
You're a madman.
Since COVID, I've gone from 1 to 25. So if you want to understand why I'm doing so well selling premium commander cards on eBay, it's got a lot to do with those kind of patterns of collecting and building, right? Commander is just a completely different animal than Standard ever was.
You get an idea, you build it. I like it.
And I don't build like all the time, but I build, each set comes out, I usually pick one thing to build. And I don't take apart very often because I don't really need to. My inventory is pretty deep. But even among the Pro Traders that do take apart to rebuild, that's a process. Like we've got Pro Traders that have one in each color pair. We've got Pro Traders that maybe only have four or five. And
we've got some hardcore completionists, yeah.
Sure. We've got some people that just like red, you know, black, white, or Esper decks, and they change up which commander and just keep the components, like their Smothering Tithes and Vindicates and so forth. Anyway, biggest mover on Magic Online, White Plume Adventurer, the other part of the Caves of Chaos Adventurer combo with the Dungeon Crawling, 4.64 ticks to 8.18, 76% gains. All right, let's jump into cards to watch. I got a couple of good ones. We went back to take a look at, I was on this topic in my head as I was doing the research for the cast about the specialized subsets from Standard and Premium sets draining out relatively quickly. And I was like, how about Brothers War? How are those schematic cards doing? And I took a hard look at two that, you know, I noticed that Mesmeric Orb was drying up, because of the Mothman. So I went and looked at a couple of others that are also mythics in that release, regardless of what their original rarity was, and I picked out Altar of Dementia as a schematic foil that looks like it's primed to dry up. There, you can currently get them in the $14 to $16 range, so let's call it $16. And I'm saying these could go 16 to 30 within a year pretty easily, given that this is 114,000 decks on EDH Rec. There's lots of different play strategies that are interested in this, and the Mothman only provides additional pressure given the synergy.
So there, I could have sworn there had been a special version of this, but I think I was thinking of Phyrexian Altar, which had a special borderless. The only
in 2X2.
Yeah, the only unique art is this one from the BRR set. So, you know, if you don't want to go old school on original Tempest, then you've got to pick up this one in the schematic. It looks cool. It does cool things. If you're building a Mothman deck, you want to be able to mill the bejesus out of somebody, and this will get you there. This is part of any number of infinite combos. So this seems completely reasonable. What's the current inventory on this schematic?
There might be 10 copies around the price point I mentioned, and then it's going to drain up towards 20 to 25. And sum total, there's less than 20 listings at Nearmint.
Yeah, Nearmint foil in the schematic, yeah, there's only 10. So once this is gone, there'll be some backfilling in, but this seems pretty solid to me. It's only going to take some interest. The foil's gone up $3 in the past month or so as the supply dries up. And this was a mythic, which is also relevant. So yeah, this seems a super solid pick. Good call.
One of the other things I've clocked is that as they continue on with the releases of the serials, and they tend to be of 250 or of 500, people are like starting to key into their number. And the more of that goes on, the harder it's going to be to get serial cards. People thought, oh, like, there was a lot of talk about, oh, it's too much serial, none of it's special. But people are missing how collecting actually works. If you do something consistently, like, and I, you know, I have 007 Lurrus and a couple of others, I'm going to keep looking for 007s. I'm not going to buy them all the time because I don't want to blow a ton of money just to get my cute number. But here and there, I'm going to bite them off. And you don't, when there's only 250 or 500 of something in the world, and there's a few million active Magic players and at least a couple hundred thousand ones with decently deep pockets, this stuff is going to dry up. So if you look at the Altar of Dementia schematics on TCG Player, there's only 10 listings. Nobody's got more than one copy listed. The lowest price copy is 290, and then jumps up to 350 pretty quickly. Not a crazy idea if you run Altar in an important deck of yours to bite off a $300 serial. Will they print another one someday? Yeah, maybe. So that big deal within 10 years that goes from 500 to 1,000 serials of the same card. I think you're going to be fine with that.
I think you'd be fine too. I think that most of the serials, if you like it, if it's an important card, I think you should go for it. I'm about to pick up the Serialized Dragons from Ravnica Remastered. They've come down to a price point that I like.
So talk to me about your first selection here.
All right. So I have a Zaxara deck, right? Zaxara, I forget what she is, but she's the Hydra commander that taps for mana. Whenever you play an X spell, you get an XX Hydra token. They did a secret lair that was only released to premium WPN stores, and it's calling all Hydra heads. And the entire thing goes for, I just got mine for $30. I got one copy. I might go back and buy some more. But one of the cards in there is Unbound Flourishing, which was an original Modern Horizons Mythic. It's gotten a list reprint. And the Secret Lair version, which, you know, is borderless, has this trippy art. It's readable, thankfully. But it's available for a pretty cheap price at around $10, and every other version is $13, even for non-foil versions. This is clearly the best version. It's gone up about $5 since the beginning of the year, so there was a point at which we could have gotten in even cheaper. Sadly, that time has passed, but we can still catch it on the upswing. There's only 21 vendors who have it available, and only a handful of them have, you know, a lot of copies. There's one person who's got a pretty significant wall at 20 copies for around $12 a piece. But this is a card, whenever you play an X spell, double the X. And it's an enchantment for 2 and a green. So if you like double, if you have anything that has an X in its mana cost, this is one of the things you absolutely have to have in the deck. Zaxara is the best X commander, unless you want to get into Roisin Meanderer, who taps for 4 mana that's good for X. So This one just feels like a great place to be, and I think that especially if you're playing it, you should definitely get your personal copies. But I think in, you know, 6 to 12 months, this should break $25.
And the reality is, Zaxar is not like that big a deal of a commander,
right?
But they're going to print some other commander that they're going to print some other commander that cares about X spells again at some point in the future. That's just inevitable,
right?
And then people are going to go, oh wait, there's that secret layer copy that's already drained down to almost nothing, and there's like 10 copies left, and they're just going to disappear and go up to $30 or $40.
Yeah, it's only available in non-foil. So I'm sorry, in foil, the. There is no non-foil version of this secret lair. It's only foil, and it was only available through the premium stores. So there's not a lot of these available either.
Yeah. My second selection is another one of the schematic cards. This time I'm looking at Helm of the Host schematic foils. Same kind of timeline, same kind of price, same kind of target. They're about $15 or $16. It's also a mythic from that release. Probably going to hit 30 or so. It's in a similar number of decks on EDH Rec, 121,000 versus 114,000 for Altar of Dementia. And the thing that's got my attention here is that there is key art on one of the commander decks that comes in both regular and premium for MH3, where some character is very clearly wearing the Helm of the Host. I suspect that's going to be a commander that has a similar ability to the Helm, as opposed to a reprint of the Helm. That leads me to believe that Helm could easily get a reprint in the deck, but it won't be the fancy version of the Helm. So anybody who's looking to upgrade that deck over time, or just use the card in general, I mean, 120,000 EDH rec means fancy versions of the card are just in demand anyway. It's not going to take much for this to drain up. And if somehow the deck features the ability but not the card, then there'll be a run on these for sure.
Didn't they say that the Modern Horizons 3 Commander decks are going to have some collector edition?
Yeah, silver foil. But those decks are going to be, they're supposed to be like 150 retail. But if they're heavily allocated, they can end up being 250 to 300. The cost basis is so high that you're going to have trouble with the version of Helm of the Host out of that being less than 16. And we don't know how good that's going to look. I can imagine silver foil is going to be a subtler cousin to surge foiling, would be my guess.
God, we're going to have a silver foil to go with the silver screen foil that was in double feature. They're running out of words, man. They're running out of terms.
Indeed. I mean, you could have a trivia show where most people, most Magic players would fail if you just asked them to identify the name of various treatments.
Oh, good God. Would you pass that? I wouldn't. Like, I file everything mentally under showcase or extended art, and that's it.
I would do pretty well, but I could not get them all, that's for sure.
Oh, now you've given me something to challenge you on the Discord. I can't wait. I think this is a solid pick. Again, like, I've never seen Helm of the Host not draw all the hate ever. If you manage to stick it on something, it's pretty redonk. I have a copy of this in my Iara deck so that I can give Iara hexproof and then equip the Helm of the Host to her and then start churning out extra Iaras, and then the game is over pretty quick.
Godo being the classic one shot, but
sure.
You put this into Joda or whatever.
Really, anything.
You know, Pantlaza, etc.
Pantlaza, good God.
Then you cast a dinosaur
double
at some extreme discount and you get double discover. Plus whatever the dinosaur does. Yeah. I mean, it's just good on big swingy commanders.
Yeah, that's a winner.
All right, your final selection here. I just put 4 of these in my cart in Japan at $3 a piece.
Well, good job, because Illustrious Wanderglyph is available cheaply as an extended art card. It's a couple of bucks cheaper than the regular frame version, probably due to how much easier it was to pull this from the slot for the Lost Caverns of Ixalan Commander cards in the LCI collector boosters. So there's more of the extended arts out there, but we were talking about this in the Discord the other day in terms of a Mr. House card that I didn't put into my Mr. House article. This is ridiculous. It's 4 and a white. It's a 2/2 with Ascend. Other artifact creatures you control get 2/2 as long as you have the City's Blessing. And then at each upkeep, you make a 1/1 colorless gnome artifact creature token. It's pretty ridiculous. It's really easy to get the city's blessing. It makes all your artifacts huge. It's just slam down, go to work, get lots of artifacts, win games.
I mean, it's Tendershoot, Dryad, and White.
Right.
With artifact synergies. And we already knew Tendershoot was...
good. Amazing. Popular.
Yeah, good. Yeah, a great card. So, not super surprised to see this doing well. It was flagged up front as being, you know, akin to that. And giving other artifact creatures you control +2/+2 until the end of the game, if you ever manage to ascend, is not hard to do when you're getting a token on every upkeep, and you probably started with at least 5 permanents in play to cast this thing in the first place.
So right now you can get the foil extended arts for around $650, and I think they're going to hit somewhere around $15 in the next 6 to 12 months. Not necessarily from Mr. House. It's really great in Mr. House, don't get me wrong, but it's just going to be good in every artifact deck. And since we can get a premium version, the extended art, so that makes you a little safer from the inevitable reprint at some point. Although it's a gnome, which they haven't done a lot of as a creature type, I think a reprint is going to happen. You just never know when.
The thing about this card is you think, oh, artifact decks, but it doesn't actually need to be an artifact decks.
Because... no, you're just turning out a 3/3 every upkeep.
Yeah, I mean, the Tendershoot Dryad part of this is perfectly happy to generate tokens on every upkeep, whether or not anything other than those tokens ever gets the +2/+2 bonus isn't all that relevant, especially in builds like, say, Ginny Fae. Ginny Fae is more than happy to get a 3/1 dog or a 2/2 cat on everyone's upkeep.
There's no way to go wrong on this, yeah.
And in my Saint Traft Convoke Jeskai build, I run this as well because I can use these to convoke out cards. So, yeah, I mean, this is just a good tokens card in general. And it's got, like, a relatively deep amount of inventory at present, but that's to be expected given that it's a foil extended art rare from, you know, a set that's been out for less than 4 months. And as a result, I think it's going to take some time for these to drain out. I would imagine the foil extended arts are going to get stalled out in the $8 to $9 range for a while. But I also don't think this is the kind of card they're likely to reprint anytime soon. And we don't have a Commander... we don't have a Commander Masters 3 on the horizon that we know about in the next 2 years. So, we'll see.
Yeah, it's also... the foil has gone up from in the last couple months by about $2. So we've reached a point where I'm happy to start picking them up. And at the moment, the non-foils are a little bit more expensive, but that's just a blip in the data, I think. It sells a lot of it sells a couple of foils every day of the extended art, so I'm confident in this one long term. Out of these four, James, which is your favorite?
I think Altar of Dementia schematic foils seem the most like a lock to me. Helm of the Host is pretty close, but there is some reprint risk in that MH3 deck. Altar could show up almost anywhere as well, but this particular version is just going to be harder and harder to come by as time goes on.
I'm inclined to agree. I like where this is. I think as a combo card, it's got a higher likelihood of some kind of special guest, but given what we know, I think you're probably right.
All right. As our weekly topic this week, we're just going to go through a few of our favorite cards that we think might have a shot in Fallout. But before we do that, let's talk a little bit about the print run of this set. People that are paying attention or were trying to get a hold of this have probably already realized that unlike most collector booster boxes that are plentiful heading into release, the Fallout boxes have been hard to come by and in fact are sold out in many smaller stores. We have a successful group buy brewing on this where, you know, we got our members a decent amount of product, but not nearly as much as we wanted to. The people that got in on it are going to make good money and easily cover their yearly fees just on this deal alone by the way the market's looking. But not everybody could get in because they just didn't print as much as the demand seems to support. The interesting thing is, I wonder how much lower the demand would be if the product wasn't scarce. There's that whole chicken and an egg thing, sure. Right? This is a very medium set overall. There's some great commander cards in here, but it's not particularly relevant to most of the other player bases in Magic. You know, there's some Fallout fans that care. There's some casual players that might be attracted to various offerings in here. cereal people might be interested in the bobbleheads just because they're cereal. But overall, you know, Wizards just did not have faith in the product, as evidenced by our math. I mean, we know that with Lord of the Rings, one of the best-selling sets of all time, there was something like 275,000 collector booster boxes printed last summer. And then heading into the holiday release, we calculated that there was another 125,000 collector booster boxes. And we knew that because when they give a drop rate for serialized cards and you add up all the serialized cards in the, that are available in the set, you can reverse engineer the number of boxes that need to exist for those to be present. And as a result, we were able to take a look at the numbers they gave us for Doctor Who, which was the last Universes Beyond release in the fall. And we knew that there, you know, by in contrast to the 400,000 plus boxes of Lord of the Rings, we knew that there was somewhere around 100,000 boxes of Doctor Who. And that's only if the sub 1% drop rate for serials in that set was closer to 0.5 than to 0.9. If it was at 0.9, then there was even less boxes. So could have been something like 60,000 or so. And that was just 15% of the Lord of the Ring print run. So that is a tremendous difference. And now as we're looking at Fallout, if we reverse engineer from the serialized bobbleheads against an assumed serial drop rate of approximately the same amount as it would have been in Doctor Who and in Lord of the Rings, then it tells us that there probably isn't more than 30,000 boxes of Fallout. I mean, that's 1/13th of what they printed for Lord of the Rings products.
So if it was exactly 1% to get a serialized bobblehead, you're looking at 300, and there's 3,500 serialized cards. You know, special is 7 times 500, so 3,500. And at 1%, you would need 350,000 collector boosters. And packs, divided by 12, yeah, that gives you 29,000 change in terms of boxes. And we know it's less than 1%. So when James says anywhere from 5 to 9, he means 0.9% or 0.5%.
Yeah, oh, 0.009%.
No, it's not 0.009%. It's
0.9%. Sorry, sorry. Yeah, 0.009 chance, but 0.9%.
Right. Correct.
Yes, thank you. Bottom line, they already had way dialed down the Doctor Who print run versus something like Lord of the Rings. And then Fallout is half of the Doctor Who. So if you're wondering why collector booster boxes are $400 plus on TCG Player right now, and Star City Games has them up at $450, and I'm sure Cool Stuff is pretty similar, that's why. Because allocations were slashed across the board. So now the interesting question becomes, is this dialing back of print runs for Doctor Who, for Ravnica Remastered, for Fallout indicative of the entire year? Or are they picking and choosing to try and get smarter to matching supply to demand? And where I'm going with that is, what are the allocations going to be like for collector booster boxes for Modern Horizons 3 and the premium decks for Modern Horizons 3? So far, the scuttlebutt in the vendor community that I've talked to is that they're expecting CBs to be relatively plentiful, because it seems like Wizards would be shooting themselves in the foot. If they want to come anywhere close to their revenue numbers from 2023, they need MH3 to be massive. On that basis alone, I would expect the CBs to be relatively easy to get your hands on. But the premium decks is another beast entirely. We know that the premium decks for 40K were hard to come by and pretty much stayed hard to come by. They reprinted the regular decks to try to service some of that demand, but they never went back to the well on the premiums. And I suspect that's to do with this very specific number of steps that are required to implement the treatments, the surge foil treatments and the silver foil treatments for MH3. They probably book a specific print run at Cardamundi or whatever, and then, you know, it's a hassle to go back again. And they want this stuff to be hard to come by, and they want it to have collector value, and they want some things in the market to ascend in price, because that's what keeps people interested.
Also, like, their schedule's been, you know, with so many things in the schedule, there just might not be room in the schedule for, you know, taking a couple of weeks, a month, to do a run of premium 40K commander decks. They were just like, nope, don't have time. Let's just keep rolling.
Well, this has always been probably the reason why you don't see the high, you know, the most premium things in Magic reprinted. Like, Modern Horizons 2, for instance, was kept in print for pretty much 2 years, but that was regular boxes, not CBs. As far as we know, they never went back to the well on that. And they just printed a ton of them to begin with, so they were around.
Didn't we talk about this in the Discord at one point where we don't know of a time where, except for Lord of the Rings Holiday, where they've gone back and done a second issue of collector boosters, right?
Yeah, this is my point, is that as far as we know, CBs have been sacrosanct in terms of their print runs. That doesn't mean... There's still a huge difference between, as we just showed, between how big the runs can be. So it's not like... You know, when you say that they didn't go back to the well on Lord of the Rings, they still printed 400,000 boxes. But the demand for the set matched, right? It sold very well and never got cheap. So, and imagine what the prices of things like the One Ring and so forth would be, like the key cards from the set, if they had not done the holiday release. So you can, people were, you know, everybody, including us, complained about the holiday release from one angle or another. But the reality is, it looks like the market needed it. Especially if they're not going to be able to touch that property again for a while. So, the underlying point I want to make about Fallout, as a result, is that with boxes floating over 400, there is a very good chance that the best cards in those boxes are going to float very, very high as well. Because there's only 30,000 boxes in the world, so we can actually do some calculations. I haven't run the math on this yet, but something like Ravages of War, which is, you know, Borderless, is the highest priced single available out of these boxes. This is just the Portal Three Kingdoms version of Armageddon, right? Which you shouldn't be running in your EDH playgroups anyway, if you have a heart and or a soul. But there's only three listings so far on TCG Player, and they start at $130.
Let me see if I haven't done this math yet. I'm going to be releasing the math of Fallout on Friday. So I've started doing some of the math on things showing up. So in that slot for the Surge Foil, that's only going to be in the last spot. So there's going to be Traditional Foil, Surge Foil of the Ravages of War. If you give me 2 minutes, I can probably come up with an estimate on that.
The point I'm making is that a mythic in Lord of the Rings is not at all equivalent to a mythic in Fallout. Because if it showed up in both, if there's versions in the original and holiday releases, which is true of most of the cards related to Lord of the Rings releases, versus something that just shows up in Fallout, like Ravages of War Borderless, there's just way less of them despite them both being listed as mythics. Way, way less. Compare something like Shadow of the Enemy Mythic various versions to Ravages of War Borderless, where Ravages of War Borderless only has the one version and is in a product that had, you know, something close to a tenth of the overall print run. It only goes to reason that the cards with the highest demand out of here are going to be very hard to come by down the road. And also not something they're likely to go back to the well on. I mean, there's going to continue to be more versions of things like Crucible of Worlds and Soul Ring and so forth. But I won't be at all surprised to see these pre-order $30 Soul Rings dip low, say to 15 or something at release, but then start to climb up pretty quickly because it's still a Soul Ring with a fairly unique piece of art on it. And the foil versions of those may be, you know, very pricey indeed because they're mythics. They're not uncommons like they are in some other circumstances.
Right. In the final slot, all of these are all going to apply. It doesn't matter what symbol is printed on them. They're going to show up at equal rarities.
Right. But at a much lower overall print run. Like if we have 30,000 boxes, you and I can run that math for Friday about how many, like almost with relative precision, how many Soul Ring Borderless foils from Fallout exist. And it's not going to be that big a number.
Yeah. It's going to be
low single digit thousands, maybe just hundreds.
Well, my first pass at the math, and I reserve the right to say that I was wrong because I haven't finished all of this yet. But there are 35 options in this last slot, and that means we are looking at traditional foil and surge foil. I'm just leaving out the serialized bobbleheads from this. So either going to get serialized foil or I'm sorry, surge foil. Or traditional foil, And so you've got two cracks at Ravages of War. There's so 35 options, 70 total cards in that pool, and 1 in 10 will get the Surge Foil option. So mostly the Surge Foils were going to be around...
My quick math is saying something like less than 1,000 copies of each. Yeah, those numbers are very close to the kinds of things we saw out of the Magic 30th Anniversary Edition $1,000 boxes when we were talking about what... the modern frame duels print runs right. were like. So, yeah.
That sounds right, but like I said, I reserve the right to be wrong.
So yeah, you're probably not going to be able to wait very long to get the stuff you want out of Fallout. So figuring out what cards are going to fit in a bunch of decks and... going hard on those is probably pretty smart, because some of the biggest cards you can pull out of here are commanders,
right,
that are mostly going to lead their own decks, but they're all could also be, you want to be looking for the cards that are going to have broad applications. So, you know, Ravages of War is more of a collector piece. Crucible of Worlds is just a highly played card. There's Mechanized Production in here. There's Steel Overseer. Those are pretty great in Thopter/artifact creature decks. And you're also going to, you know, Soul Ring might be the biggest target just because it's the most, you know, has the highest play pattern overall. And given that it was assigned at the same rarity as everything else, and that slot is relatively deep, that could be the easiest target here.
Could be. Could be. Were there any specific cards you wanted to talk about from this set, or?
I mean, looking at the rares... from that same perspective, I would be looking at something like the Farewell.
Right.
That's already a mega staple. Is Nuka-Cola a rare?
Nuka-Cola is officially an uncommon. Nuka-Cola vending machine, right?
Yeah.
That's what you're thinking of? That is officially an uncommon, I believe. Let me make sure. Yeah, it is officially an uncommon. But for most of these slots, that doesn't matter too much.
Maybe Codsworth Handy Helper.
Sure.
If people realize how good this card is. I mean, that gives your commanders ward 2.
That's always worth doing.
Always useful.
I think that Nick Valentine is going to have some potential, because every time something dies, you get a clue. And that's just, you know, combo piece ahoy. I also think the Helios 1 land, because... we haven't had a good repeatable energy source, and Helios 1 just going one tap, make an energy. They will eventually come back to energy as well. Probably not for a while.
Well, Modern Horizons 3.
Yeah.
We already know there's an energy theme in MH3.
Now, one of the things, though, is that Fallout is legacy legal. It's not modern legal.
Sure. But there are going to be Modern Horizons 3 energy cards that reinforce EDH themes that are going to drive additional demand for the older energy cards, including the ones that came out 4 months earlier.
Yeah. So I think Helios 1 making a land that makes you energy for just one mana, you know, tap, make an energy. I think that's going to be a pretty popular thing when these energy decks go crazy.
The card Atomize, destroy target non-land permanent, proliferate.
Yeah.
Like that one's pretty good. There's an Exotic Orchard here, and we've seen other Surge Foil Exotic Orchards do well. I would imagine this one will as well. There's a Heroic Intervention in here. There's a Guardian Project.
Guardian Project has had a couple in a row, so this makes it an excellent time to pick up a few, I think. And I love the Rampaging Yao Guai, the X triple green. When it enters a battlefield, it gets X11 counters. It's already a 2/2. And you destroy any number of target artifacts or enchantments with mana value X or less. Just huge, plus the boom, and it's targeted. So you get to choose exactly, you know, what does and does not die.
Yeah, that one's cute. So anyway, very little amount of Fallout in the market overall. Now, of course, there are all the Fallout decks as well, which to my knowledge are not super limited, but probably are printed at a lower rate than the MH3 ones will be, or the ones related to Thunder Junction. So, yeah, I mean, this is a group of cards to keep your eye on for sure. I would be looking for some deals on the first couple of weekends. And past that, I think you're just going to find there's going to be a dearth of inventory. I'll tell you what you will not see. I don't think you're going to see the gaming company crack a pallet of this 6 months down the road. I just don't think there's enough of it sitting around.
That is also my thinking, yeah.
If that existed at distribution, it would already be in play. People would have ordered it.
At when they're pre-selling on TCG Player for $400 plus and Star Scene and everything, yeah, I don't think there's any chance that there's some just floating around in a distributor waiting for somebody to scoop it up at a low price.
Personally, I'm going to flip most of mine pretty much immediately and just pick up the singles I need, because that just seems like the play, especially heading into a cash-hungry back-to-back-to-back with OTJ, MH3, and Assassin's Creed, heading into an early August release for Bloomborough.
It's a busy damn summer. It's like one set every 3.5 weeks or something.
Yep. Alrighty, brother. Where can folks find you online?
You can find me online at Twitter at Word of Commander, or my articles every Friday on mtgprice.com.
And you folks can find me on Twitter at mtgcritic, as well as via my occasional articles on mtgprice.com. You can also find me haunting our ProTrader Discord. I'd also like to remind our listeners to check out the mtgprice.com ProTrader service for just $9.99 a month or $109.99 per year. You can get early access to this podcast, fantastic articles by the best MTG finance minds in the business, low-cost group buys, and a super active Discord forum that will drive better returns and save you money playing Magic the Gathering.
Once again, MTG Fast Finance is proudly sponsored by Cool Stuff, Inc., where you can find all sorts of cool, nerdy stuff in stock, including all the best in Magic the Gathering singles, sealed product, and a plethora of other collectibles. Please use the promo code FINANCE5 during checkout at CoolStuffInc.com to save 5% off your order and support this podcast. That's it for this week, James, but more is always coming.
Thank you, Cliff. Thank you, listeners. And we will see all of you next week on another episode of MTG Fast Finance.